Assalamu alaikum.
Wa alaikum assalam wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. Welcome to another episode of Coffee and Benefits with Ayub and Redbeard. How your day been so far, Art?
A tale of two cities, man. A tale of two cities. Yeah, it started off really rough, man. And a lot of that kind of go back to one of our earlier podcasts and dealing with mental health. So, you know, I'm in the school system and I'm in the SPED classroom. So it's a lot of mental issues that goes along with trying to educate the young scholars of the day. But
yeah,
it's really something, man. But at the same token, it's really beneficial because, like, I'm gaining a deeper understanding of, you know, a lot of different mental illnesses and how it manifests itself and how it could be misdiagnosed or undiagnosed. And it's really a lot to it, but mashallah, the day end up, you know, turning out to be a little bit better. How about your day?
Yeah, mine's as well a tale of two cities, but unlike some of the stresses you dealt with today, I just had to deal with shopping with the wife, man. And, you know, that's a stress one in of itself, man. I don't never see men accompanied with women in the stores, man, and they be having these happy looks on their face, man. Especially when you go into places like Target or you in. I try not to go in like Bath and Body Works or nothing like that, but my wife, she loves candles, so drag you all in the Yankee Candle or something like that. Yeah, it'd be stressful, you know, shopping, because they got to look at everything in the store before they even buy anything, man.
Yeah, so, and I think that's like a misrepresentation of what's going on, because it's like, okay, are we shopping or are we hanging out? Like,
right.
I get in my little bag like that, but I already know what I'm dealing with, what I'm trying to do or not trying to do. So those are times where I'll generally just be like, that'll be some me time type, where I'm just like, where I could just take my own little time and just whatever the case is. But when it's time to shop, man, what do we need? I'm trying to get it and go.
No, I guess I'm a sucker, Rock, because I get duped every time, man. I'm always optimistic that we're just going to go in these stores and get what we're going to get and leave.
And don't tell me like two or three, because I translate that as 30. you know, I go in there, when I go in there to shop, I be looking for reasons why not to buy as much stuff as I need. My list always gets shorted.
Yo, let me tell you something, right? you know, since I've been married to my wife, I done learned a lot in terms of like being frugal and saving money and stuff like this, right? So since I've picked up on these tips and little hacks and stuff that she showed me, like, that's my MO now when I be going in the stores, right?
Right.
I'm trying to get some quality, and I'm looking out for the deals, right?
Right.
So that's where I'm at. I'm always trying to find a deal now and get back to the car so we can get home and we can chill. But, you know, the women, they don't have the same kind of brain like we do. I don't know if you ever seen this meme, right? And it has a man's brain and a woman's brain, right? And for the man's brain, they just got a straight set of train tracks, right?
Right.
It just goes straight. And then for the woman's brain, it's just this jigsaw of a puzzle of railroad tracks, right? Like, their minds are just always everywhere processing and overanalyzing. And, you know, I mean, we just straight to the point.
I mean, a good analogy I heard is that, and it was actually from my mom coworker, and she made the analogy that men brains are like waffles and women brains are like spaghetti. Because one thing that I think as men that we do really well to make sense of our own thought, we kind of compartmentalize everything.
Most definitely.
You know, so when Surf go in, it just like goes into that one little section at a time, but everything is separated. So we tend to be tunneled vision. When we come up with a plan, we tunnel vision, where women is just like trying to, man, untangle noodles. And
yeah.
And I also think that, but one thing I will say, how men and women kind of complement one another, is that men, we're almost like a big picture. We see the bigger picture.
Right.
You know, where women see nuances. You know, they kind of like really detail oriented, where men, we're great at like, look, I'm about to build a house. And she'll be the one, but no, you got to have this right there, because if that's right there, then you could put that right there. And then, so when it comes to the like minute details and stuff, it's like when we have a passion for it, then we in there. But
right.
But it's always a drag fest, you know.
Yeah, see, you know, one of my new hobbies now is being a professional chiller, right? Like, mm-hmm. I'm all about my chill time. And so, when it comes to me doing stuff, I'm just trying to get what need to be done and, you know, not worry about the nuances, man. But like you said, that's how they really operate, right? Because peep game, right? My wife has these planners, right?
Mm-hmm.
Now, everything that she needs, she could put it in one planner, right? But she got one for bills, one for groceries, one for like her gardening stuff, one for something else, right? And then she's always looking to buy more. But each planner is extremely detailed in itself, right? Tabs and what she call it, like washi tape and all this other stuff, man, that these women nowadays, listen, man, it's a whole culture. Like it's an actual, it's an actual thing, right? Like if you look it up on, you can look it up on Instagram, like planner girls or nurses who plan or gardeners who plan or whatever, and you'll just see all of this stuff that comes up.
No, so, I'm gonna tell you what's the absolute worst, and I'm gonna get killed for that. But just basic communication. You'll get asked, "How's your day was?" Oh man. Pop, 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 pop. We'll hit all the highlights and moved on. Oh, you might ask your Zaljan or the woman in general, how was your day? What happened at work? You might get a text. Oh, I got to tell you what happened at work. It's lunchtime. You like, all right, what happened at work? All right, so you know this morning when I woke up, I made my coffee, right? And I didn't have French, but I'd be like, oh, yeah. Get to the point. Just, okay, what happened? And it's just like, oh my goodness.
Yo,
I'm going to tell you something. We have the most disrespectful faces when it's over the phone. We be throwing little tantrums in the car. But yeah. what be funny is, as men, we could be on the same page. And that's why I love the Muslims, and to the point where we be burnt out. Because we could say a little bit and have a lot of meaning. A brother could call Salam Aleikum or Aleikum Salam, man. What's going on, man? Allah Mustaan. Yeah. Man, yeah.
You know he's going through.
Nah. Man, hey, look, we be like, man, I feel you. Yeah, man, I'm just, you know, yeah. And we like, yeah. So we really be grunting, but we already filled in the details. Like we don't have to, once we hit a certain little keyword or how it's expressed, I already know what you're dealing with, man. It could be one of three things, and what you say next is going to indicate what it is, and then you're going to be like, yeah, man.
Hey, yo, but let me tell you something, though, man. You know, as a husband, when you're dealing with your wife, and you know, when I say stress, when she stresses you, I don't mean that in a negative way, but just how wives stress husbands out. You always feel like you like the most like poorest soul out there. Like, man, why she taking me through the ringer like this, man? It don't even gotta be like this. And then you get somewhere around some other brothers or even like your coworkers. Cause I remember one day while at work in the van, and like everybody is singing the blues about their wives, right? And I just say to the guys on the van, man, I thought I was the only one that went through this stuff, right? But it's like universal headaches, man, that women just give their husbands all around the board, man. And so like you give a pound in solidarity, like we the battered husbands, like we did on that thread on Twitter that day, man. Like,
oh, we was going there, wasn't we?
It just came up, man.
Hey, look. I think one brother deleted his account and this man came up with a ghost joke. All I know is he was like, man, my wife see this, I'm gonna kill you. I ain't heard from that brother in about 3 weeks. Next thing you know, I get a request from Ghost 186. I'm like,
yo. All right, so listen. Getting into this episode.
Nah.
Our last episode that we did, the audio didn't come out to our standards.
Right.
So
right.
We wanted to try to redo the episode, man. But one of the things that I like about this podcast and podcasts in general is like the organic nature of the conversations. So I kind of feel like trying to go back and do the episode over, quote unquote, will kind of take away from that chemistry. So maybe we can revisit the subject at another time where it'll actually kind of flow in the course of a conversation like we would like. So today, for some reason, I have been thinking about my father a lot, right? Mm. And I kind of wanted to have like some man talk, right? In terms of our fathers, right? Or if not our fathers, those really figures in our lives and some benefits and life tools and stuff like that that we may have gotten that kind of helped us develop in terms of our manhood. Mm-hmm. So my first question, what was your relationship like with your father?
Whew. That's a deep, complicated question you asked.
So we can leave it
no,
at that.
No. I'm not saying that to avoid the question. But my father is a very, very, very complicated person.
Okay.
So all of his relationships and associations, it's never like linear. It's not like just a straight, it's an adventure, man. But all in all, I had a pretty solid, strong relationship with my father. A really, really strong relationship with my father that has gotten better as I got older and was able to, as a man, understand some of the decisions that he made and better understand him a lot more. But my relationship with my father was like really good, man.
Yeah, see, I'll say this in terms of like some of those complicated matters with regards to our parental relationships, right? You know, whether it be your father, your mother, grandmother, whomever was that parent figure in your life. Like, as children, you really don't have the insight and the intellect to sit back and fully evaluate lots of situations. So lots of times we take things on face value, right? So, for example, if you had a parent that was on drugs, right?
Mm-hmm.
The face value thing that we took was that you're a drug addict and you're a bad person, right? And not looking at some of the intricate things that person is dealing with within themselves, right? That even led them to, seek out those drugs and the battle that they may be having with those drugs. And it doesn't happen until later in life, once you gain some worldly experience, some insight, and you're able to look at situations from like a full spectrum, that you can then start to sympathize with them and actually start to see them how they actually are, right? Anyway, with regards to my father, I had a real strong relationship with my dad as well. And I'll tell you a funny story. Like growing up, they used to always say that I look like my father, right? Mm-hmm. I'm named after him and everything.
Right.
And when I would look at my dad and I would look in the mirror, I didn't see it, right? I could never see it. And I used to get mad, like, stop saying that, man. I don't look like that dude, man. Right. But I knew he's my pops and all that stuff for sure. However, when I left from Beckley, right.
Mm-hmm.
You remember when I left from Beckley, I had to end up going to the state, right. And finish off some stuff there. So, in Virginia State, they didn't let you have the beard, right.
Right.
So I remember going into the intake there and like they was just geeked up to cut my beard off, right? Like I remember one of the captains seeing me and he was like, oh, you got to get rid of that, right? So they put me in the barber chair and they, trim me up, make me look nice and everything. And so I go to the mirror to, check out how I look. And wallahi, when I looked in the mirror, I seen my dad, right? Like, physically seeing my dad, and I'm over in the corner, like geeked up laughing. And then people over there, and I'm by myself. They come over there, they're like, hey, man, what are you laughing at? What's wrong with you? And I'm like, nothing, you know what I mean?
Yeah. But
I finally seen what everybody else seen in terms of the resemblance that me and my father had with each other.
Right.
I had a real strong relationship with him due to a lot of the trials that he was going throughout life. During my younger years, our bond really didn't get real strong until around the time I was like 23 or 24 when he asked me to come and live with him. And, he helped me get on my feet and stuff, try to get me out of the streets and stuff like that. And so me and him were able to bond real good like that. So, what is something that your father taught you in regards to manhood, like in terms of like manliness? Because we're talking about when we're coming up, we're talking about late 80s, early 90s, right?
Mm-hmm.
So the atmosphere in those times were real different. You know what I'm saying? So what is something that he taught you that you still carry today with regards to your manhood?
Ooh. Man. Wow.
I don't mean to be trying to get deep or anything, man.
Because now, because even though my dad wasn't in the home, it isn't until now that I'm older that I realize how much significance and impact my father had on me to the point. like to the point now where I'm just like, wow. But one thing I will say that my dad was, and the one standout thing about him is his thirst for knowledge. I will say hands down, without question, my dad is the most intelligent person I know have ever met and I will ever meet. He, when I tell you that he knows something about everything,
yeah.
And if he doesn't know, all it takes for him is a split second to pick it up and he can expound on it. I've never seen my dad lost for words, lost in a subject, lost in a topic. I don't care if you're talking about politics, religion, cars, carpenter. So if I was to say one thing that my dad taught me is how to be a jack of all trades, not to just lock yourself into any one position, but always be fluid and follow whatever your, if your mind is going on this journey, then follow it.
Right.
You know.
My father, he was, my dad was like, he was real smooth, man. I'm trying to put you in the mindset of somebody that we would deem as smooth. I don't know why Keith Sweat is coming to my head, but my dad was a smooth guy, right? He always used to dress well and everything, man. And so I remember one time, and this is in the later years of the relationship between my father and he told me one time that that I was better than the Jews and the Christians, right?
Mm-hmm.
He said, you're better than the Jews and the Christians.
Right.
Because my father was Muslim as well, right? Especially during these times, right? He was Muslim as well. So he told me, he says, you're better than the Jews and the Christians. And he says, I don't mean to tell you this. He said, I'm not telling you this, like, you know, for you to be arrogant or you to look down on people. He said, but you're better than them because they believe you're better than them, right?
Mm-hmm.
So when they find out that a person is a Muslim, they already put you on a certain type of a pedestal. And I know you've encountered people, whether jokingly or being serious, and they say, aren't you Muslim? You're not supposed to do that. Aren't you Muslim? You're not supposed to do this, right?
Right.
So, but they don't hold themselves to the same kind of standards, right? You'll have a Christian, he'll see you drinking, and he'll say, you're Muslim, you're not supposed to drink, while drinking himself, for example. And what I took from that throughout life from that is that you have to stand on those principles that you believe in, right?
Yeah.
Lots of times we kind of fluctuate within regards to our principles, right? And we know with regards to Islam that that's a lofty thing that we're holding on and we're claiming to, right? And it carries a great responsibility.
Right.
And so that's one of the things that I've always took from my father and my work ethic from my father too.
Yeah.
And I remember posting a while back on Instagram that I'm becoming my father, right? That was the post. I'm becoming my father. So, and what I meant by that is that my dad, he brought a house, right?
Uh-huh.
He brought a house, but he, you know how they do the situation where you're written to own the house, right? So you put down a certain amount, similar to a mortgage, right? Mm-hmm. But it's kind of flimsy. So he still, he quote unquote owned the house, but he doesn't, right?
Mm-hmm.
And the amount of work that he puts into the house subtracts from the cost that he still owes towards the house, right?
Mm-hmm.
My dad would go to work for 8 to maybe 12 hours a day, because after his regular job, he had a side job that he would immediately go to. So he would do his job, and then he would come home, and then he would start doing repairs on the house, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so during the weekends, I would go and work with him doing his little lawn care house. Wow. But my dad was a hard worker, especially when he had me with him, that he would always be like, you can't slack off, especially when you're working at someone's home, for example, because like I mentioned, we did the lawn care together. So when you go to somebody's home, he can't be seen working hard and me, like, you know, chilling and moving at a slow pace. So if he's working hard, then I have to work just as hard, if not harder, than him. So, and that's how I am when I work. And that's one of the things that a lot of employers, they say about me, like, yo, you're a real hard worker, right? I never get any knock about my actual work ethic. And that's something that I got from my father as well, just having a strong work ethic and mm-hmm. being a sucker for your wife, because he loved my mom, right? Him and my mom were married for 24 years. And when they divorced, he married another woman up until the time that he passed away. So, mm-hmm. but he wasn't like how he is or how he was with my mom, how he was with his other wife, right? He kind of reminds me with his wife. You ever see the woman on payday when you work hard and she stayed home, you know, dolling herself up? And uh-huh. then when you come home from work, you just hand over the wallet.
Yeah, man. You
hand over the wallet, right? So that's how my pops was with his wife, man. And I think I inherited that from him as well. Yeah. Mm. So we're talking about some things that that we learned from our fathers, or like the men in our lives with regards to actually having some kind of we'll just say masculinity, for lack of a better terms. And like you say in Arabic, like rujula, right? Like masculinity, manhood, you know, bravado or whatever. But like wow. I mean, in the 80s and the 90s, a lot of what we would say is our masculinity or manhood and stuff like that was somewhat connected to certain principles in life, right?
Yeah.
Because if you look at it, there was gems, right, that helped us get through those times, because those were tough times, right? So, for example, like, you know the saying, live to fight another day, right? So if you were in a situation where you can't win and you ran, it didn't, well, not in every situation, but in most situations, if you was in a situation that you had to get out of there and you got out of there, those were some of the things that your parents taught you, or, you know, your father, your grandfathers taught you, right? Like even, and I'm not, you know, inciting violence or anything like that, but even when it came down to the times where we had to actually fight and stand up for ourselves, those were still gems and jewels that, you know, we still carry on in life, where now we're not having physical fights, right? But back then, you know, you had to have courage to stand up for yourself, right? And so that translates now, where you have to still have this level of courage to go out and, you know, find work and provide for your family and things like that. This is still a physical fight. You know what I mean? And some fights you can't win, and some you just have to, you know, put your head down and swing that haymaker.
Right.
But now, in terms of yourself, right?
Mm-hmm.
we know that you're in your 40s. I'm 40. We know Islamically that when a person or a man reaches the age of 40, then this is supposed to be where he reaches his where he actually becomes a man. He's not from the Shabab anymore. He's actually a Rajul. He's actually a man now. He comes into his full maturity at the age of 40. And a lot of the foolish stuff that he might have done in his youth, he leaves those things off.
Yeah.
Now that you reach that plateau, right? What do you think or what do you see has changed in terms of going from 39 to 40 and trying to still process that or through that?
I would say that the greatest thing that I could think about is like self-awareness.
Mm-hmm.
Like since being in my 40s, which I'm 43 now, I'm just like really, I'm becoming more introverted. I don't socialize much. I don't entertain a lot of foolish conversation. And I'm thinking better. Like, you mentioned something about, the concept of learn, you know, fighting another day, live to fight another day. And now I find myself now where I don't want to say a tactician, but I like think of different scenarios. I'm not always thinking about what's the best that's going to happen. I'm thinking about what's the worst that's going to happen. And if the worst happens, how do I want to play it? Like even and fighting, like one of the things I've learned now is that never put yourself in a position where decisions are made for you or you place your own back against the wall. But if you fight, that's because that's what you want to do and you fight on your own terms. But it's just the thinking process about things. I mean, I think and I overthink and I analyze. And man, like some people might say judgmental, but I look and I analyze. Doesn't nothing escape me? A person can say something and I'll catch it and I don't feel a need to respond right there. I'll put it in my little file cabinet and I'll turn it over later and try to understand it. Another thing is I'm not as emotional as I once was. I don't have too many emotional outbursts. And when I do, it's with an intent behind it. So it's not even really an emotional outburst. But I don't make decisions based on emotions. I don't act based on emotion. I kind of try to think my way and just rely on my intellect regardless of how I feel. Because I firmly believe that the ugliest sight that the world has ever seen is a black man crying. You know, so I know that when push comes to shove, man, as a man, your emotions, that stuff is romanticism. Share your emotions with me. What are you feeling? It's okay to be vulnerable. Nah. It's not okay because it's not even okay to be in a position of vulnerability.
Okay, so let's go there for a minute because I don't necessarily agree and I don't totally disagree in terms of men in vulnerabilities, right? Like mm-hmm. for example, I won't let my wife see me cry, right? And when I deal with certain things, sometimes I'll deal with it alone. And that's just because that's just the mannerism in terms which I'm used to dealing, right?
Yeah.
For example, you know, I just told you about, you know, my relationship with my father, for example, right?
Mm-hmm.
And my father died while I was in prison, right? So in that situation, even though a lot of the people around you would sympathize with you and understand if you shed a tear that you're, because we've seen that while we were in there. People lose their mom or their, we've seen people cry when Michael Jackson died while we was in there.
Yeah.
Right? So we understand, like, the people understand the emotion, right? Even within men within themselves.
Right.
But yet and still, when my dad died, I withdrew to deal with my emotions, to assess it, and then move forward with that, right? And I didn't let anybody see me in a quote-unquote vulnerable state, right? So that's just in the manner that I'm accustomed with dealing with, like, even stress or hurt or whatever. I'll just withdraw and try to, you know, deal with it like that. But sometimes with your wife, because she, if you got a good relationship with your wife, then she's gonna see you vulnerable. Like, it's really no way to hide it. And I think there's a difference between, like, showing vulnerability in terms of just showing your emotions and expressing your emotions, and being emotional in regards to how you share your emotions. Right.
And hold on. Let me clarify something. I'm gonna stand on it from this point. Now we all have emotions. So it's not that, and it's not just betraying like this tough guy, like, yo, I'm like the man of steel. Because now there are times where it's a time and a place for everything. Like, for instance, like, I'm about to get myself in so much trouble, but alhamdulillah. Boy, you be throwing these little subjects out there, boy. This is what I mean. If a catastrophe hit, a calamity hit, I'm not going to get emotional, because I know that if I get emotional, one thing, let's debunk the myth. Men are more emotional than women. When we go in, we go in. It got to burn itself out.
Okay, I'll let you finish and then I'll come back.
But we also, and we know, like, for instance, I know that if I get mad, if I allow that anger to be displayed or to give it, I can't vent that anger, especially not right then and there. When I'm mad or upset, I need to be quiet. I need to go somewhere and I need to talk myself down off a cliff.
Mm-hmm.
Because my anger will just feed on itself, and when I blow and when I pop, get out the way. Like, it's no calm down. It's no, once it's go, it's gone. And I've learned that at and I realized at a young age that I can't allow myself to go into these throes of emotion. So from that aspect, hold on one second. Hold on one second.
It's
certain times where if whenever I dig into my emotional bag, It's for a specific purpose. It's not always it's going to be okay. It's not that. It's like, all right, I need some counseling on this particular issue. And then a lot of times, I'll kind of let that down with a comrade and somebody who I know isn't going to look at this as weakness. Somebody who can relate to that.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? So, but yeah, go ahead. Let me hear what you got to say, man, because you might throw some things in there that might make me reflect and reconsider some things.
No, but when you further elaborated it kind of went into my mode of thinking. Because sometimes with me personally, I look at emotions and anger as two different things, right?
Mm-hmm.
So when I say that a person is being emotional, like they're being led by their feelings, right? To the mm-hmm. point where they're not gonna truly think a situation through, right? Right. They may throw a tantrum. And then when you couple that with anger, right, then as you mentioned, men become more emotional than women. Because in a lot of instances, men go overboard with regards to their anger, right? Anger is tied to their feelings, right? Because their feelings were hurt in some sort of a way. And they vented that feelings through anger and it ended up going overboard. So in that regard, then, you know, I agree that men can be much more emotional than men. And if you remember the hadith of the Prophet ﷺ, where he mentioned about the women being the majority of the hellfire.
Mm-hmm.
And when one of the Sahabiyat asked him, you know, why is this? One of the things that the Messenger he mentioned is that they cause of a man to lose his intellect, right? The woman causes his intellect. So then he becomes an emotional person, right?
Right.
Not just in terms of dealing with women, but sometimes in general. So, I kind of agree with that as well.
Makes a man lose his intellect.
Nah. And if you ever, I know you heard the lecture before. It's called Role Reversal,
right?
By Dawood Adib.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he mentioned some of that within that lecture as well.
And another thing is too, man, like I grew up hard bodied, man. Yeah. So man, I walk around with a chip on my shoulder that if not me, then who? I feel like I'm the one person who I can't afford to lose my cool. I can't afford to make certain mistakes because it's bigger than me. So I'm always at a point of always checking myself and biting my tongue, you know, and not say the first thing that I feel. Instead, I have to rationalize and think through this and put my emotions and my feelings to the side. And be like, all right, I know how I feel, but what do I think? What, okay, let's go with the tangible. Okay, it's this. This need to be done. This need to be done. I got to take care of this. And I'll put my own feelings and my own emotions on the back burner, and I'll deal with that later. And generally, right. I'm able to resolve that stuff on my own. You know,
also, but you know, how we came up, has a lot to do with how our worldview is viewed. And because, for example, right, if you take a man from Afghanistan, for example, right, and you bring them to America, right? Or any, yeah, we'll just stick with that, right? And you bring him to America, a lot of his mannerisms, we'll deem him to be feminine, right?
Right.
Because in this country, manhood and masculinity is defined by how you know, tough and macho.
The John Wayne syndrome.
Damn, that a person has with them, right? So that has a lot to do with now when we're talking about what it means to be vulnerable, right? Because when we look at the Messenger of Allah, alayhi salatu wasalam, for example, we know that he cried, and he cried a lot, right? And he did it at times in the midst of his companions. He did it at the times in the midst of his wives, right? So we can look at that and we can take from that these types of vulnerabilities are actually part of manhood, right?
Yeah, no doubt.
And sometimes by not displaying them, it kind of makes you like a rock, right? And then and because we're talking about in terms of having these things with the people that we're intimate with, meaning our wives and our children and some of our companions and things like that. So so that's one of the things that you know, coming into your full maturity, that you are able to that you actually see is how now you do more thought process versus emotional response.
And also, let's add, I want to add something on to that too. Because I believe that our generation was probably the last generation who was raised or grew up or was influenced by manly men.
And see, and this is, to be honest, wallahi, this is part of why I wanted to have this conversation. Today, while I was out, I see one of the youth, and he got dreads in his head, and he's just looking all dusty. And one of the dreads wasn't what made me view him as just being dusty, right? Because this is part of the youth culture now, mm-hmm. right? But what just kind of disheartens me is when I see them, and then they just have their, like, they have their pants halfway down displaying, you know, all of their underwear and things like this. Not only do they not have any kind of shyness about displaying themselves like this in public, they don't have any pride within themselves, right? You're in a public, like I'm telling you earlier, we're shopping, we're out, right? So I'm seeing this in a public place. And listen, a lot, you know, I'm Mr. Black Excellence, man. Mm-hmm. Like, I want to see good for the people, man. Not only do I want them to have Islam and to be guided for the truth, but outside of that, I still like have a sense of pride with regards to my people, right? And it's always this sense of like being ashamed when I see the young people out there and then they just display themselves like this, man, for everybody. It's already a negative connotation among us, and especially amongst the youth, right? And so you don't speak well, you don't dress well, you don't carry yourself well. So how is it that you really expect people to have a positive outlook on you? And I'll say this. I grew up in my aunt's household, right?
Mm-hmm.
And the time where I was living with my aunt, she was married twice, right? And she had a boyfriend once. Those three men that she had in her life, they were men, like solid men, right? And they instilled in me and my brothers like mentally traits, like certain things that you do and you don't do and things that you say and you don't say. One of the things, like I mentioned about my father, is that my father was a nice dressed man. Like every time you see my father outside of a work setting, he was nicely groomed and he was put together. That was something that I took from him, right? That's a manly characteristic. You know, when we was coming up and we would go to like house parties and stuff like this, or go to the skating ring or whatever, and or just even being around the neighborhood, man. You know, before we would go the night before, you would get your toothbrush and your soap and you would clean your shoes. You would iron your jeans and make sure your shirt wasn't wrinkled and all of these things like this. So when you went out of the house, you wanted to put a nice presentation on yourself.
Right.
And I think a lot of times amongst our youth, one of the things that I don't think that they really take into account, right, is that they are a representation of their families, right? Because, listen, this isn't a thing that was only in my household. When our moms took us out, when she got us in the car, if we was going somewhere, when she got us in the car, she get in the car, she starts the car up, she turns over the back seat and she say, y'all don't embarrass me in front of these white folk, right? Mm-hmm. Turn back around and drive off, right?
Right.
And so we know that when we got somewhere, we had to present ourselves properly.
Right.
Right. And if we didn't, we was kids, right? We did kids things. They would look at the mother like, what is she teaching them? Right. So I think lots of times that this is one thing that they don't actually take into mind, is that they are a representation of their families. And like you mentioned, now with and so you mentioned that we was that generation that were, or the last generation that was actually raised and reared by real men, right? Because you could even get them gems and jewels that you got from your father or your grandfather. You got it from the drug dealers on the corner. They gave you game, right? That's what they call it back then. They gave you game, right? They will pull you up and say, that's not how you move. Don't do this over here or don't do that. And what we have to be honest about, to some degree, we have to take some kind of onus that, right?
Mm-hmm.
Generation, they're our sons, they're our cousins, they're our nephews, right? They used to look up to us when we was out there in the streets running and ripping and so on and so forth. And so we left their mothers, their aunts, our sisters or whomever to rear these young men. And as a result, they weren't able to raise men, right? And so now you have what you have today, right, amongst our youth. So the men of the previous generation have to take some kind of responsibility with regards to that, right? And I think that's just, if we're being honest about the whole situation, right, we have to take some kind of responsibility to that. And so and that's still part of our conversation, because you mentioned this in a previous podcast as well, that while we were away, right, I think you went in younger than me. When I went in, I was 25, right?
Oh yeah.
I'm 25. And I believe you may have been a little bit younger when you came in.
Just turned 19.
And as you mentioned, while we were in there, we went through certain rites of passages.
Yeah.
And I don't know about anybody that's in the state systems, because I did majority of my stay in the federal system along with you. So we know that within that situation, one of the things that was always emphasized, and it would be everywhere you go, I'm on man time, right? So we were being taught how to be men by men, even though it was in those unfortunate circumstances and situations, we were still taught how to be men by men. And now that we're back in these situations, the responsibility isn't lifted. And one of the things that, and I said this to you before, that even the job that you have and the what you do in terms of being a teacher aide, and you're still being a positive influence, right? For young men and for young women, but you're still being that positive influence, right? And that's also which falls into manhood.
Yeah.
It's that you're willing to be an example, right? You're willing to be an example. You're willing to poke your chest out, right? Like we talked about earlier. Picking your battles. Having courage, right? Yeah. And you're willing to do these things, man. A lot of people aren't. A lot of people say, man, them kids is difficult and I can't deal with them, right? So now, I think that's what has to happen, is that we have to not only accept some of the blame, but be willing to take the hands of the youth, man, and try to show them these things with regards to manhood.
Yeah.
So back to the initial point about entering into manhood. For myself, I'll say that when I turned 40, it was a hard day for me. Because I kind of understood, like, you're a man now, and the principles that you claim are a guiding force in your life, you have to actually stand on them and live on them, because you're saying you're a man, right?
Right.
And if you're saying you're a man, then and the principles that you have, you stand on those and you represent those. Right. So that was a hard day for me from that respect. I don't know if you've seen, and it's been months ago, but I posted on Facebook and I titled it A Letter to Self from Self. I wrote that to myself, like admonishing myself. I was sitting in the car with my wife and I just kind of typed it up to kind of admonish myself. And one of the things that I wanted to do, I'd say, is that when a person reaches the older that he gets, right, that he should cling on like more tightly to the dean, because he doesn't have a lot of lifespan left.
Yeah.
And you know that hadith of the Messenger of Allah, alayhi salatu wasalam, about the lifespans of the sons of Adam.
Yeah.
Right? Between 60 and 70 and sometimes more. And so when you look at it, when you actually enter this plateau of manlyhood, you can look forward and say to yourself that I only have, a few more years left, 20, maybe 25, 26. Years left to actually be productive. And sometimes, because I know with myself, man, I kind of hopped on like material accomplishments, right? And so And you've been to some of them, like pre-release things.
Mm-hmm.
And they always tell you that, you know, if you're 30, then you should have X, Y, and Z, right? You should, a man should have a bank account. A man should have a job. A man should have Keller with Keller like that. You should have these things, right? And so having accomplished, you know, those things, like we have a home and we have cars and we have this and we have that, before we got to that age point, right?
Mm-hmm.
So